I'm Ed the Sock, and this is FU Politics on Fun, the FU Network, powered by your support on Patreon.com, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, Patreon.com/FU Network TV, and through PayPal at FUNetworkTV@gmail.com. Drop us a few bucks. Don't be a freeloader. And now, here's your show.
Now, let's listen.
Welcome to Hey Ladies. That was redundant. I'm trying to get all the estrogen off the top because this week the topic is men. What? Why are we talking about men on a women's podcast? Because, surprise, surprise, women have impacts on the men in their lives. And this week we have two returning favorites. We have Lex Gore, who is very passionate about this topic. Lex is a Jewish Nazi or degenerate leftist, depending on which side of the horseshoe she's triggered by encouraging critical thinking. She spent her adult life with the Market Punks, which protect Kensington Market from neo-Nazis, and Michelle Badusky, a social activist, author, motivational speaker, living in rural Manitoba, just outside of Brandon with her husband and four children. I think we know why Michelle is qualified to talk about this topic. Ladies, welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
All right. So I was like, we're going to do this. I know Lex was big on this. She's like, I want to do this topic. And then this week, finally, I had a thing happen and I'm like, screw it. We're doing it this week. Because over the holidays, I do not just over the holidays, full time, I do gaming content on YouTube and Twitch. And so I have done like women's content in video games, but more and more we started talking about men's stuff. And I'm like, should I just break down and do some men's issue stuff? And I put a poll up on Twitter and I actually had some male feminist allies. You can hear the air quotes in my voice, sent me eye rolling gifts in response to asking if I should do men's content. And I'm like, wait, did some dude just like eye roll mansplain me, one? But also, like, there was no explanation for it. It was just a knee-jerk reaction to the idea that there are men's issues that need addressing.
It's harder to get laid as a male feminist if you pretend that you care about men. You're not going to get your dick wet that way.
Which is a big irony, right? I mean, it sort of defeats the purpose of anything. So that's where we're going to start. Lex, I knew you were really raring to go on this, so I'm going to open up first.
You just want me to open up?
I want to see what happens if you just open the throttle on this.
Okay, here's how it fucking goes. Sensationalist headlines are all around us, and it says one out of every four homeless people, they're female. But you don't see the subtext there. That means that 75% of homeless people are male. Mm-hmm. I see boys don't cry. Little girls who are natural leaders, they're bossy. Little boys who have deeper emotions are crybabies. This is how we punish our future talent. So I was raised by a hear me roar feminist. You know, these women escaped war. My grandmother used to put on red lipstick for courage in communist Russia. She'd slit men's throats. She, you know, she killed her rapist. They emigrated. This is after the Holocaust. They threw my mother over the Austrian border. I mean, they survived some shit. Mm-hmm. And she told me that men can't succeed without women. Women are the support units. We're the ones who are so powerful that we take care of the men. We take care of the children. We take care of the animals. We teach them love. We nurture them. And part of that, a big part of that, is our men. We don't let them fuck up. We don't let their darker animals take over, and we're the ones who call the shots by being a support unit who gives them an opportunity to be the right kind of man.
Now, that begs the question, what happened when men don't have that? And I'm going to throw over, Michelle, I'm going to throw something over to you because you have four sons and you're married to a man. I have to say that now. Yeah. But I have heard in both academic literature and anecdotally, the phrase from men that the women in my life would rather I die on my white horse than see me break down.
Well, that's such bullshit.
So you, What do you mean, expand on that? What do you mean?
Well, okay, just to correct you, I've got 3 out of my 4 kids are men. Okay. I do have a daughter, but I've been married 3 times.
Okay.
I'm on husband number 3, and we always kind of joke around that husband number 1 and husband number 2 are both dead, so things aren't quite looking that great for husband number 3.
Oh, dear.
You know, he's on a short leash. No, just kidding. But you know what? I kind of get where that saying's coming from, you know, the white horse, and we want these strong men. You know, my husband's a huge support for me. Mm-hmm. But my second husband, my late husband, died by suicide. Oof. And, you know, he suffered from severe complex PTSD. Mm-hmm. I was, you know, I wasn't with him when he served in the military, but I was with him afterwards. And I was there when he died. I was, you know what? I want my husband with me. And if that means that sometimes he has to cry, or sometimes, you know, he has to be less than a freaking shining white knight, I'm okay with that, because he's not my hero. He's my partner.
Right.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'm a freaking mess, and sometimes I am the warrior bitch from hell that he needs to, like, kind of ground. You know, I work in male-dominated industry. You mm-hmm. want to talk mansplaining? I get it every freaking day. Mm-hmm. And I think these antiquated ideas of what men are and what women are, they're kind of fluid, right? It's like, it's relationship based. And I know for myself, if I can be there for my kids or my sons, it's like, if you want to cry, freaking cry, because I just want you to be here. And if you need to feel less than a white knight, then you know what? So be it.
All of that hit me so hard.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, Michelle, it's not coming from you. So with your second husband, obviously there was some, lack of a better term, programming from somewhere.
Oh yeah.
That prevented. So where's it coming? Family of origin?
Oh, absolutely. You know what? And I think too, I mean, I've been very open. You know, he's been gone, you know, 12 years now. His family of origin, it was, you know, there was a lot of abuse there. There was a lot of that makeup of boys don't cry, mm-hmm. and you got to be strong, and you got to do all this, and you never feel, right? You, all this stuff that we talk about, you know, the feeling and the emotions, that wasn't allowed. He was getting help for, you know, it's how we ended up where we are. Mm-hmm. He was getting help, but he also didn't talk about it. So when he did die, his family of origin attacked me. You know, it was my fault. Because, you know, there's no mental health issues. That can't possibly be it. And it's just, I wasn't always healthy. I wasn't always the most supportive. And I think that I learned a lot from his death of what I needed to be as a partner, but as a woman, and what it meant to me as a woman to have men in my life. And I've got sons. My sons are 5, 8, and 26.
It's a big jump.
Yeah. And you know, how I raised my 26-year-old son is not the way I'm raising my 5 and my 8-year-old, because I've changed. Society has changed, but I've changed, and I've learned a lot about what it means to be a mom of boys, and you know, what it means to be a woman dealing with men. And it's interesting.
I really fear for little boys.
Pardon me?
I really fear for little boys now. Because
absolutely,
the way the climate is for them is that they're almost growing up with, like, being a boy is original sin. They're being raised with self-loathing and, like, you know, the poisoned M&M analogy. I don't know if you've heard that. That, you know, out of
one in the bowl is poisoned.
One M&M is poisoned. So all men are potential rapists. Yep. And teach your boys not to rape. And it's like, it's a little boy. You teach your little human. I have a little girl. I'm teaching my little human, don't hurt things, have empathy, be kind, be considerate. You know, you teach your little ones, whether they have peepees or wee-wees, how to mm-hmm. be good people. And the fact that I'm an ex-military wife as well, and watching them systematically depersonalize him to the mm-hmm. point that I'm diagnosed with CPTSD too. He ended up committing cop-assisted suicide.
Oof.
At the end, it was like he was expendable. It was like a joke to them. It was like bounty hunting. Like the overall tone was like, it was funny. There was, I still can't explain it to this day because I was quite a young bride. I was only 18.
In the military or in the police?
The police. Right. Like he was already, I don't know if he was honorably or dishonorably discharged. His father was a diplomat, so he was kind of a dilettante. He did what he did. He had millions and millions and millions of dollars. But in the end, yeah, cop assisted suicide while wearing gold lamé pants, mind you, which I thought was brilliant. But
oh, if you're going to go out, do it in gold lamé, man.
Yeah.
That just took a turn I did not expect.
He did it in style, and that's how I'll always remember him. But he was very much so like my current husband, whom I love dearly. And I see this, and I'm trying to deprogram him in a way. Everything is suck it up. Don't make a fuss. You know, man up, even for me. Everything is like, you know, hazing sensitivity is gay and weak. Cry all you want. You know, doesn't help anything. Just, you know, suck it up and get the job done. That's what I had to do. Eat the shit sandwich. Just, you know, get it done. So he was raised almost like his, he also comes from a military family. So I guess I have a type.
Yeah. I mean, there are good things about the military in terms of discipline, in terms of camaraderie. I suspect that that's not just the military doing it. I mean, since we're already on the discussion of suicide and, you know, people see, we have a disconnect when it comes to discussion of suicide on the realities and the statistics and then how the media depicts it. Because the media, I mean, you know, this show, what is it? 12 Reasons Why, 13 Reasons Why, 13 something like reasons. That. Yeah. It's a young girl, right? Mm-hmm. And when we think of the suicide epidemic, people think of teenagers who hate the world and all that stuff. But truthfully, the greatest risk group for suicide is men over 50.
Yeah, my mother was 64 and my grandfather was 75, same date.
Wow.
And then my grandmother was, I guess you could consider it assisted suicide, but she was in her 70s and more metal than woman. So
there are a lot of people walking wounded right now. And there's a lot of discussion about, because I mean, what basically happens for people who aren't aware of it with men over 50 is there's this combination of, you know, the expectation is you work 14-hour days on the regular. That's how you show you're a man in this day and age. But
14 then, hours a day?
Yeah. Yep. Oh, it's...
My husband works 18 hours a day.
It's nuts. Like the unhealthy messages about work that are being and men don't have, and I hate to say this, but men don't have the same kind of acceptable release valve that women do, and it's not right that women have to choose between career and family, but if women want to step back and say it's for the kids, I believe that's still more acceptable for women than men.
Oh, it is. Absolutely. There is a double standard there that, you know, I got to admit, even I kind of looked at it and I got to, you know, and I hate to say this, but when they brought in, you know, paternity leave, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's like, oh, well, I'm taking 12 months off because my wife just had a baby and I'm going to stay home. When that first started, I kind of looked at that and even I had those kind of old values of, you know, really, that's what you're going to do. And that's what I kind of mean about learning so much in the last, you know, 10, 12 years, 15 years since my husband's death about what society says. You know, I've been so focused on what society says I should be like as a woman that I never really stopped to think about what society is telling our men. And I've watched my sons, and you want to talk about raising our children like just humans. Consent is a big thing in my house. And when I have my, you know, my 14-year-old daughter playing with her 8 and 5-year-old brother, I am on them constantly. It's like, you know what? They said stop. So no means no. Stop means stop.
I think that's what Lex was saying about teaching your little human to be a good human.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Sarah has my kids, same thing. Like, no means no. Like, she put her foot on me. And, you know, you have to say no means no and teach them that. But, God, what was I going to say before? I really fear that your boys, any man can be destroyed, even arbitrarily, by a false rape accusation.
Absolutely.
You know, it's funny. I have an interesting experience with that because I actually got stalked by another woman because I defended a man against a fake rape accusation. And how did I know it was fake? Because I observed some of the things that she claimed he did. It was a combination of physical assault and claiming like just sort of domestic abuse. And she basically accused multiple different people of the same assault that was likely self-inflicted. And I stood by the guy. The unfortunate thing is that's when I discovered that men in those situations behave in very unpredictable ways.
Yeah.
And he kept putting himself in situations to further the false accusations. Hmm. There was this mind control phenomenon where, you know, she'd show up, get weepy, let's go talk, and he'd put himself alone again with her. And I went in at one point, reamed him out. I said all she'd have to do is rip her shirt and start screaming, and there you'd go, you'd had another incident. And it's an unfortunate thing because we do, it's interesting because this is sort of, remember when we used to street proof our kids?
And back when they could actually go on the street.
Yeah, and that went away for a while when those that Lex, as you said, don't rape thing replaced. And I want to be totally clear. Rape myths are real. It doesn't matter what you're wearing. It doesn't matter, you know, how flirty you were. None of that matters. No means no. Yes means yes.
I could literally be in my bedroom wearing a G-string and, like, you know, holding a dildo. And if a guy comes up there, if I don't say let's fuck, it ain't happening.
Yeah, no. Oh, yeah. But it's almost like we have to start street-proofing. And it's not just boys, because I know a gender non-conforming person, their pronoun is they, that recently got accused. I know lesbian couples who have, you know, there's been accusations. So it's almost like we're having to street proof our kids against accusations of this sort.
I've literally
razor blades and Halloween candy, you know?
You know that I grew up on the streets in the 90s and we have like a whole structure. One of my roles as enforcer is that men don't hit women. So if a woman is going for one of my brothers, you know, he can't hit you, but I can. So I'm stepping in there, right? That's, you know, I'm a queen. I can move anywhere. But I've literally been in the room because the punishment for rape is to get absolutely boot-fucked, right? I've been in the room.
Wait, I have to define that.
Boot-fuck?
Yeah.
It's exactly what it sounds like. You're just getting fucked by boots, like just boot party.
So we have to explain for people who are like, what's going on? This is a subculture, a counterculture element in the punk movement.
I've been in the room where women were conspiring. They were, she got broken up with. So they were going through it. It was three of them saying they were going to, I'm just going to say he raped me and he's going to, you know, get boot fucked. I'm going to get him ousted from the scene. And they were like conspiring to do this.
In front of you.
I've witnessed this. Like I've seen conversations like this. So I'm a survivor. I do believe survivors. I connect with survivors. Of course I sympathize with survivors.
Right.
But it has to be known that it's a huge threat to men because you never see the resolution. You never see, you know, the aftermath of when the person is cleared. One arbitrary false rape charge ruins a man. Mm-hmm. And I've seen women conspire because they know this. They'll say, oh, I'll just say you raped me.
But I think it goes deeper than that. And what we're not looking at, you know, I've been accused of, you know, victim shaming I've questioned some women, especially on my social media platform. I am a victim of, you know, I've been sexually assaulted. I'm an adult survivor of child sexual abuse. Mm-hmm. And what happens is suddenly when these women do make these false accusations or they take sexual assault so lightly, and I will say this, you know what? We don't ever want to compare trauma. We don't ever want to say, well, I was raped worse than you were. But when
isn't that awful that we have to say that, but please continue.
You know, it is, but there is this level of, you know, when we do see women flipping out because someone grabbed them, you know, grabbed their ass in a bar, I'm not saying that she doesn't have a right to feel victimized, but when all of a sudden it's like the cops are called and there's, you know, like Lex is saying, there's the bringing in the sisterhood and I'm a victim. What happens is then it then minimizes what happens to someone else. And it's like, if everything is sexual assault, if everything is rape, then nothing is. And what we do is we don't just victimize the men with these false accusations or these overreached accusations. Mm-hmm. We're actually victimizing ourselves because the next time someone really is violated, nobody is taking it freaking seriously anymore.
I saw something even worse. Because what is it? 1 in 6 or 1 in 8 men is also a victim of either sexual abuse or intimate partner violence.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I know several.
Yeah. And then, you know, psychological abuse, anybody's capable of psychological abuse. And so I knew a guy who came forward. I might talk about the extended details of this. I might not, but I knew a couple guys who came forward, and then the coming out, the status as a victim, they were accused of harassing the woman they were accusing of abuse.
Okay.
Yeah. I've seen this happen more than once, which is why I've started, especially online, I've started counseling everybody, do not post your hashtag MeToo story on public internet, mm-hmm. because you have to be prepared to be open to scrutiny.
I think at the end of the day, like, the reason I don't identify as a feminist anymore is because I came from the hear me roar generation. I'm for human rights. We, the people, we fight for, there's a million billion issues out there. Men have issues. Women have issues. Non-binary people have issues. Animals have issues. Countries have issues. The fucking environment has issues. As humans, it's not one category takes all. It's not women's issues or men's issues or black issues or Jewish issues. We, the people, fight for these issues together. We even mm-hmm. fight for fucking animal rights. We fight for the fucking planet. We fight together. And it's not about, you know, I don't like the way feminism is actually the least inclusive. It's supposed to be, oh, exclusionary feminist or inclusionary feminist is like, you know, fighting for black rights and trans rights, etc. But since it excludes men's rights, it's not inclusive. So human rights. Thank you very much.
See, it's funny, Lex, because you don't identify as a feminist for the same reason I refuse to stop identifying as a feminist. Because I don't want to abandon the whole thing to the MRFs and the TERFs, you mm-hmm. know, the male exclusive trans exclusive radical feminists. And it's funny because, like, we have very similar opinions on a lot of things, mm-hmm. and it becomes down to the issues of identity. And it is just because of, I think, just experiences and how we've processed our different experiences. And that's where I was going to go with this. Like, I want to be sympathetic to people who have had terrible experiences and understandably have sort of an irrational discomfort around certain types of people. And when we get into these support issues, you know, how do we, and maybe Michelle, since you've done like the straight up activism stuff, maybe you have a solution for this. How do we blend the support of men as humans, but also be sensitive to people who have, you know, women or non-binary people who have been violently assaulted and may not be comfortable with men in the short term?
Well, I think a lot of it has to come with, we need to stop I'm big on this whole kind of, I call it just bigotry, right? Mm-hmm. Anytime you judge anyone by the group they happen to belong to, you're being a bigot.
Word.
And, you know, and it doesn't matter if you're doing it, you know, I got called out, I got into a Twitter war last week, you know, calling out someone about the whole, hey, boomer thing. It's like, you know what, that's ageism.
Yeah.
Let's start judging people on who they are as individuals, regardless of, you know, what's between their legs, how they identify, whatever. And I know that over the last, you know, 20 years, as I've worked with different, you know, groups of victims, when I've worked with myself and support groups, that's what it comes down to, is that if you were victimized, you were victimized by a person,
right?
Or, you know, in some cases, unfortunately, people. That right. does not mean, you know, they do not represent, you know, if you were victimized by a man, that does not mean all men are evil. Just like, you know, I'm a bitch, that doesn't mean all women are bitches.
I have a perfect example for you. I got the shit kicked out of me by a group of black guys when I was a teenager, and they were calling me white bitch, Snow White.
Jeez.
The girls were really taunting me. Shit kicked. Like, I had to be hospitalized. One of my lungs collapsed. Wow. But I do not hate black people. I fucking have so many black friends. I have black family. I'm not scared of black people. I love people. So right. unlike, you know, the current trend of, like, you know, shut up, white guy. To me, that's the same attitude. It's like you're judging somebody. I don't like the whole notion of reverse racism at all. I mm-hmm. think that judging somebody by the color of their skin, what's between their legs, what they identify as, whatever, I think that's hate. I think that's bullshit.
It's exactly hate. And you know what? It drives me up the frickin' wall. Like, I'm constantly, it's like, stop judging people by whatever group they happen to associate with or identify with. Start judging people. You know, I did a podcast once. It's like, don't hate me because I'm a woman. Don't hate me because I'm Métis. You know, I'm Indigenous mm-hmm. of Indigenous ancestry. Don't hate me. If you're going to hate me because I'm a fucking bitch.
Yeah.
You know, like, don't hate me because of all these other things. I don't represent, when I open my mouth, I'm not speaking for women. I'm not speaking for Métis women. I'm not even speaking for victims. I'm speaking for me.
Right.
Well, we all have to wear a shirt now, don't you know? Because I'm not very exotic. I mean, I'm Jewish. My ancestry, my DNA says that I'm like 70% Ashkenazi Jew.
Mm-hmm.
My family are Holocaust survivors. I'm fat. I'm disabled. I'm nuts. So that, and I am a trauma survivor and ex-sex worker. So that's my little resume. I've got a diagnosis of bipolar, OCD, and CPDSD. So that's my resume. But if a morbidly obese trans black woman in a wheelchair pulled up, see, everything she said would be right. I would be fucking trumped. And that's how it is to me. It's the oppression Olympics. What you say doesn't matter. It's somebody's oppression resume that either trumps you or puts you on top. It's like a card game. Anything you say is devalidated because, you know, a person who's like a visible minority said it, therefore you're diminished.
And we need
to, that's how it is.
You know, and when we're talking, like, Leanna, you're saying that, you know, what's the solution here? Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's ever really a solution, but conversations like this help. Conversations, you know, those hard-ass conversations where people are going, you know what, this isn't, you know, I'm saying it, it's just me. Like, we need to stop labeling everything and making everybody seem representative of whatever group. I was talking to, you know, I was on a podcast with somebody, and I'm like, I don't know what gender you are. I don't know how you identify. I don't know if you're a man or a woman. And we got into this argument about something, and it's like, this is cool. You know, it was neat because the first podcast I was on with Steven, it was like, I didn't know half the people I was on the panel with until after the podcast. Yeah. And I kind of looked up their bios and I'm like, oh, cool. You know, this is who I was talking to. It's like we stopped somehow, and I don't know, I like to blame social media. I like to blame the internet because it has given keyboard warriors power to be assholes from afar that they would never be face to face. And somehow everybody represents something bigger than them when really all we are ourselves.
You want to hear all my crack?
There's little squares on a screen that are expendable. So I've actually had to like curate my friends list and be like, you guys are just had an argument, but did you know that you have the same favorite band? And in the 90s, you guys would have been best friends. So maybe bypass this little argument. Your whole people, you had a disagreement on one subject instead of blocking each other and being like, this little square on my screen is shit and I'm going to block them. Mm-hmm. Talk about something else. Cause I guarantee you guys would have been thick as thieves if we were on the streets.
You want to hear my crackpot theory about where this identity politics stuff came from?
Yeah.
Too many people going to college.
Yeah.
No, hear me out. Because before, you went to college if you needed it for your trade, right? Mm-hmm. If you were just going to work in, you know, if women wanted to work in an office, you know, back in the day, before they got married for pin money, you did a secretarial course. You know, you trained for that specific job. If somebody wanted to go work in a factory, they could do it right at a high school. If you wanted to go work in a bank, you could do it with high school. They trained you. Companies trained people. Now there is this expectation that everybody has a college degree. Most of the jobs out there now, the ones like you work for a health insurance company or something like that, do not in real terms require a college degree, but you need them. And so you have people with these degrees in, you know, all these interdisciplinary things that sound really cool because they sound exciting and, oh, you're not, you know, you're not going to get courses full of dead white men. They're rebranding liberal arts degrees.
So my lesbian pottery dance degree is no good here?
Well, there you go. I mean, I remember my sister took cultural studies, and it was basically a catch-all for the fine arts program until something opened up in theater or dance or something.
I had somebody with problem glasses, me, who has seen my own intestines and has survived captivity, being stabbed, being gang raped, you know, I've been through some shit. She went out of her parents' wealthy place and has her problem glasses and sits in her little air-conditioned dorm and tells people to check their privilege while she does her women's studies degree. And it's like, it's a glorified daycare. It's indoctrination.
That's the thing, right? It's a degree in something.
Yeah.
Go get a degree. It is less important, especially in the U.S. where what school you go to matters more than what degree you get.
Well, it's a glorified daycare, and I know people that, you know, they get their degree and then they work at Starbucks.
Right, because there's too many people with degrees. And so what did all these people take? They took some sort of course that drew on these particular theories. And I'm not going to go into the root of these theories, but the ironic thing is what happened in the late 70s, early 80s, is that second wave feminism faltered under what was called the feminist sex wars, meaning all those people who say all men are rapists fought with the people who were like, no, porn can be feminist. Mm-hmm. And the pro-porn feminists won everywhere but in academia, because the sex negative feminists fought for inclusion and of course got in these conferences and departments and immediately used your power to deplatform anyone who disagreed with them. So we have this cluster within academia of people who are basically late second wave sex negative white feminists co-opting the language of something called intersectionalism with, I don't remember which one he brought it up, but the idea that oppression is, what it's supposed to be is that you cannot separate someone into their parts. Mm-hmm. That's what it's supposed to be, that you can have two black transgendered lesbians and they have completely different experiences, even though they check the same boxes on paper. That's what it's supposed to be about.
Supposed to be.
That is the exact opposite of what the term has become to mean. The whole idea of quote unquote intersectionalism is now about, well, you're black, so you must think this. Well, you're lesbian, so you must think this. And the people involved sit back and go, what? You know?
Who is it that wrote Men in Black? Do you know his name?
The comic book or the movie?
No, just the screenplay. play. I'm
not sure who wrote the Men in Black.
So screenplay. He was sitting in a coffee shop and he overheard these two women talking about Men in Black.
Right.
And they were big Men in Black fans. And he was like, ooh. And he walked up to them and he said, I'd be happy to explain that. And they said, fuck off. We don't need some white guy mansplaining it to us. And he said, I'm sorry. And he left. And this is the guy who wrote the screenplay.
Right.
Directed the movie. So this is what I'm talking about, is discounting someone. Like, I want to hear everyone's opinions. And I understand why the whole incel thing is happening. It's because...
Oh, you did my segue. Thank you. Okay.
Yeah.
That's where I wanted to go anyway. All right.
You can only shit on somebody's face for long enough before it's human nature to say, fuck you. I know, okay. Autistic.
Let's pause. Hang on, Lex. Let's break this down. Because people might have missed what you said.
All right.
Might not know what it is. The whole idea of incels. Incel stands for involuntarily celibate. The term was actually coined by a woman.
Wow.
But yeah, it has now become synonymous with what we used to refer to essentially as beta males or gamma males. Mm-hmm. And there are communities online. It, of course, came to prominence the same way so many subcultures, especially internet subcultures, came to prominence. Somebody was an active shooter. Somebody was a mass shooter. And so Elliot Rogerson, I believe, was an incel. The guy who did the van attacks in Toronto identified online as an incel. So all of a sudden, this incel term has come to prominence in the media, and it's just dropped as an insult. I got called a femcel by a guy from the Young Turks who didn't like my opinions on Mortal Kombat.
That's amazing. I don't know. I'm not prying into your personal life here.
Yeah.
But I'm like 99% sure you're getting dicked because you're married.
Yeah, he didn't care about that. And that's where I'm going with this, is that he didn't know anything about me.
Yeah.
He just decided to toss around a word that would make all the so-called progressives go, yeah, but at the same time, throwing incel around as a insult is directly connected to the value of a man based on how much sex he gets.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly the kind of unhealthy messages that are fucking guys up to begin with.
Oh, it's, you know what? It is, like, I gotta admit, I'm not a gamer, but what you just described happens almost on a daily basis on any political panel, like any discussion.
Yeah, over something.
And you know what? It's not even, it's this male idea, and they use it to hurt men.
Yes.
But by using it to attack women, they don't realize they're hurting them themselves. Like, I was attacked on Twitter over a, you know, I'm pretty heavy into politics, things like that. I got into a discussion, believe it or not, over pipelines. And I find some guy actually said, well, obviously, you have no man. No man would ever fuck you. You have no kids, and you must be vegan. Well, it's like, I got 4 fucking kids, been married 3 times. I eat meat. And
I also know a lot of vegans who are pro-pipeline.
But, you know, it was this weird thing. It's like, okay, so my attractiveness to men, or the amount of time or amount of men who want to fuck me, apparently, you know, that is how you hurt others, is by this judgment of fuckability. And this was coming from a man, and I'm like, you know what, like, why is that your, you know, call me a bitch, because, you know, I was being kind of a bitch to him, but like, why is this your, you know, mark? This is your benchmark of worthwhileness. This is your benchmark to judge people. This is your worthiness, is how much you can get laid. And it's like, you know what, honey, I probably got a way better chance than you do, but why are we talking about this? Like, why in today? This is 2020, and this is how we're still judging people. And I don't get it.
Friend turned into a incel.
What's that?
I've watched my friend I've watched my friend, sorry, my freaking dogs are playing. I've watched a really good friend of mine who's, he's autistic. He's very shy. Hold on, I'm letting my dogs out of the room.
We need a dog break. The following break is brought to you by Lex's Dogs. But we'll sort of continue with this, Michelle, priming what Lex is going to say. I think I can figure where she's going.
I have a friend who's
autistic. Okay.
He's very sweet. He's a very gentle person. He's very charitable, very good-hearted. And I've watched women just treat him like shit systematically because he's not very fuckable, because he's a little weird. He's got a lot of tics. You know, you can tell that he's not neurotypical. Just
sounds like most of my friends.
Yeah, he's very intelligent, and he's an absolutely wonderful person. But I've watched him become more and more hateful because, as I said, you can only get treated like shit for so long before you become, you know, I'm an awkward kind of, I don't do well with the ladies kind of guy. And then they'll mistreat you until he actually, like, he hates women now.
See,
like, he actually
has
hate.
Well, I worry so much. Like, I worry about my sons. You know, I am 45.
I would too.
I've seen it. You know, I've got a 26-year-old son. I've got little ones. And I couldn't even imagine, you know, trying to date as a man.
Ugh,
like whether you are trying to date other men, other women, I don't care. Like, how do you even make a move? How do you, you know, it's like,
carry consent cards. Have your son. I'm not joking. I think men should carry cards that say, my name, and consenting to sex, and you both sign the little card.
Oh,
and
they do that. You actually swap cards. They do that at certain conventions now. You actually swap cards.
I think it's a good idea because now there's a thing where a woman can actually fuck a guy and then a few days later be like, nah, I feel weird about that. I'm just going to revoke consent because I was drunk and say that it was rape even though I consented.
Well, and I think that's what's hurting not only us. I mean, obviously that's hurting us, but it's destroying men. Like, we're sitting here and you've got these women that are saying, I want a man to, you know, to be masculine and take charge. And yet when they do, we don't know how to handle it.
So
do I, you know, I gotta admit, but
there's a big difference between actually taking charge because you're showing healthy leadership skills and swinging your dick around.
Exactly. And right. I don't think we understand the difference because we don't talk about it anymore.
This is the issue. It was interesting because I used to do a weekend show on conservative talk radio, which was weird. But
I'll bet.
One of the shows that was after us was a show that was like a men's self-help thing. They were both counselors whose specialty was men. And their theory was that society has so destroyed rites of passage that men don't know how to be men. And so they end up engaging in all these self-destructive behaviors because, you know, it's not go out in the forest and kill a deer and then you are a man sort of thing. Or you know, getting your driver's license used to be a rite of passage. That mm-hmm. was a step into masculinity. It's like every culture needs a bar mitzvah, but at like 23.
I never had my bat mitzvah, which might explain a lot about who I am as a person.
Well, you know, I think it's a really good point because women, you know what, you know, cis women, okay, the minute we get our period, that's a biological thing. It's like, oh, you know, I went through it with my daughter. It's like, you are now a woman, right? Men, where do we do that anymore? You know, where do we have this idea of, we can't even define what men and women are anymore, which isn't necessarily a bad thing until we criticize people for not being what society expects of them. And yet society can't even tell them what's expected of them.
Well, I'll go one step further, Michelle. They call it gender confirmation surgery for trans people for a reason, right? Mm-hmm. Like the first time you start living as the gender you feel you are, that is a form of confirmation. That is a step that says, I am a woman or I am a man. And so it's like every segment of the population has a ritual in that regard, except for cisgendered men.
Absolutely. And, you know, as a mother of young boys, you know, it's disturbing to me. And I still see it. You know, I still see people saying to my kids, oh, suck it up. Boys don't cry.
Yeah.
You know, I absolutely fucking hate it when people say man up, grow some balls. You know what? I've changed their diapers for years. They have balls. You know, they can still cry.
See, I think, Lex, you probably do this too. I say grow some balls to everybody. It's just it's just a turn of phrase for me. It's totally theoretical. Like, it's metaphorical. It's not literal.
Theoretical, like, my dick is huge. I don't know if you guys know this, but to
your
me,
E-peen?
The whole world is about big dick energy. Either you have big dick energy or you got no energy. So it's not even about balls. Balls are fragile. Let's channel Betty White here.
Right.
Balls. That was the best.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
If you call someone a pussy, those things can take a pounding, right?
It's interesting. That's very true. It's interesting, though, because that's totally metaphorical for me. And people have said, well, that's this kind of language or that kind of language. And I see the point, I suppose, but I tell myself to grow some balls. It's not about actual balls. It's more like brass cojones kind of thing.
But how you and I see it is different. We're a different generation. We identify as different genders. I look at my little guys and I go, what does it mean to them?
Yes.
Because it's different. And I see the difference between my 26-year-old son. Like, there is the same age difference between me and my oldest son as there is between my oldest son and my youngest son, which is 20 years, which is kind of fucked up. But the difference between them is night and day.
Well, the thing too is, by the time we get to our age, and even, well, your son's how old? Your oldest
My
son?
Oldest is 26.
See, he's not quite a fully formed person yet, I maintain. You don't.
I would say he's not a half-formed person, but I'm only saying that because he's probably not going to listen to this.
I have a 7-year-old, so I don't know where I fit here.
I really think this in this day and age, you don't, and some people, it takes till they're 50.
Oh, for sure.
Most people do not become fully formed people until they're 30. Now,
I don't even think I'm fully formed. I'm just saying that the difference between, you know, those 20 years between raising my sons is night and day.
Yeah.
The language, the expectations, the societal expectations, the school system. Holy shit. That is like completely changed in the last 20 years. And I mean, I've been going through it, so I didn't necessarily realize it. But
I'm having my mind blown on that point. That's something we're going to have to explore in future episodes. It's crazy.
Yep.
I was talking to Mike about that. Like, when I was a kid, you know, we would just roam the neighborhood at large. Our moms would call us in. Now you have to be like a helicopter parent. You'll get child protective services called on you for the shit we used to do. Like, we just used to be out all the time. We'd go to school by ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We'd go hang around on like Bloor Street. Cause like I grew up around here, you know, I grew up also in the market, and like, you know, we'd go and hang out and we'd, you know, go get pizza. And I don't understand now that you don't see that anymore. It's always like, you know, you gotta be tied to your kid all the time.
Yeah.
Now.
But yeah, I'm going back to social media here, because these are the constraints that social media has put on us from other parents. Hmm. I still parent my youngest the way I parent my oldest, you know, but society has changed in the last 20 years. So letting my 5-year-old do now what my 5-year-old did 20 years ago is no longer socially acceptable.
Huh.
And it's other parents that you're almost worried about. It's like, oh my God, I can't do this, because if somebody finds out and posts it on Facebook, you know, we're going to have an issue. And you're almost parenting by consensus of social media, by a bunch of fucking strangers that know nothing about what's going on in your life.
Sounds like parenting through shame.
It is. It absolutely is. And I find myself having these discussions so many times. I always tell the story about my sons. And when my youngest was in preschool just last year, and I'm in my mid-40s, mm-hmm. I'm standing outside the preschool with, you know, my 3 and my 4-year-old son, and I'm the same age as the grandmothers, and mm-hmm. I have a child the age of the same parents, and I'm watching how they're interacting.
Right.
And it has changed so much. It's like, compared to what they're doing, I'm almost abusive. It's like, you know what, if my kids fall down and scrape their knees, I'm like, whether they're girls or boys, I'm like, you know what? You'll live. Like,
yeah,
get over it. If you're not guy, you're bleeding, don't fucking call me.
Yeah.
My grandma would have like a cigarette hanging out of her mouth and be holding like, you know, a glass of, you know, some sort of alcohol. And I remember like my 8th birthday, we're all watching Labyrinth. My parents are like at their mini bar, just like chain smoking in the same room. And like, we just used to, us and the dogs used to be at large in the neighborhood.
Right.
You know, I think that's still happening. I absolutely think it's still happening. I still think that behind closed doors, we are the same people. We're still humans. Mm-hmm. You know, parents are still fighting. We're still, you know, getting pissed off. We're still having too much freaking wine at dinner and getting a little sloppy in front of our kids.
I'm drinking.
We're doing that. The problem is that what we're seeing is this social media perfect perception of everybody else in society, and we're judging ourselves by that.
Yeah.
And we are asking our children to judge themselves by this same standard.
Yeah.
And it's unfair.
Yeah, I'm getting concerned about, I mean, one of the things I think we're going to see an uptick in, and hey, I love my superhero movies, but I think they're a big part of this. We're going to see an uptick in male eating disorders.
Oh, absolutely.
Because instead instead of creating like a greater kind of diversity of depiction in media, now all these actors are doing these like high protein, low carb, get on the express train to constipation diets to do, you know, you
get over there.
I got in freaking trouble on social media. I'm very active. Where I live in rural Manitoba, we are still heavily onto Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And I got, you know, got myself into a little bit of hot water, because one of my pet peeves is women who are posting pictures of men, and mostly celebrities, you right. know, all of a sudden I'll see a woman who's married, posting this, you know, half naked picture of like some fireman or Jason Momoa, and like, oh my, I'd so fucking do him in a heartbeat. And I'm like, how does your husband feel about that? How
yeah,
would you,
if how a would guy you did feel that,
like, you know what, but think about it. Like, I always ask them, I'm like, how would you feel if your husband was posting for the whole public to see half-naked pictures of women saying
right.
how much he wanted to fuck her? Like, there's such a double standard here. And I'm finding that, you know what, I am all about equality. I do. Mm. I do. I love what, you know, Lex was saying about, you know, that I can't even say the word. But, you know.
Egalitarianism.
That's the word.
Egalitarianism, yeah.
But I do identify as a feminist because I want to see women have equal opportunity, but equal opportunity does not mean superiority.
Right.
People can identify as whatever they want. I just don't want any misandry. If you're going to be feminist, be feminist. If you're going to be egalitarian, that's cool. If you're going to be whatever, that's great. But the minute you start making it about hating someone because of the color of their skin or what gender they're born, something they cannot help, that's when I take exception.
And I agree 100%. And that's what pisses me off about this, is that we are sitting here going, we don't want women to be sexually objectified.
Right.
We're sick of this, but it's okay if we do it to men. And you know what? It's not okay.
So no, it's not okay.
Screen where BuzzFeed was like, you know, objectifying women is wrong. And then somebody did a split screen with, you know, 10 Olympic packages of men you really want to see.
I get in so much trouble for pointing that out in video games.
Yeah.
Like the whole hot
video
hot
on video. I did a video on it.
Yeah, it drives me
People
crazy.
People see that women are sexualized. Okay, you know what lordosis is, right? You know when cats or dogs or whatever, when they want the dick, they do this position where they arch their back and, you know, they kind of put their bum up in the air.
Right.
Now that, and, you know, it goes for, like, you know, if it's a gay guy receiving, whoever is the receiver will do a lordosis pose. And that's what women do in video games. Now, men, the giver, he's going to be in a video games. And this doesn't damage men at all, of course. They're going to be about 6'5" with 0% body fat. They're going to be big and brooding. You just know that their dick is going to be like a, you know, baby's arm holding an apple. Right.
Well, that's what I hear from gamers when we get into this discussion of, you know, depictions of women in games. They're like, well, the average guy playing games doesn't look anything like the average male character in a game. What am I missing?
Yeah.
And it you know, it's interesting because there's this, as we come closer to equality, as women have more opportunities, we are going to see a shifting power dynamic. And this is something we have to be considerate of. We have the traditional gender frameworks, and we've put a lot of work into women. We're not there yet, in my opinion, just based on my own experiences. It's still too hard for women to assert themselves in corporate environments.
I don't feel like we're going to get anywhere until we stop making it about women and start making it against, it's the people versus the 1%,
well,
the billionaires that oppress us all. It's,
but we also have to think about the fact that we have basic ideas of a woman boss. We're doping it out, right? We're getting some idea.
Yeah.
But if a woman is going to work, you know, if one partner is going to be like high-powered C-suite, then that means that the other partner is going to have to be the one that assumes the primary family responsibilities. And there's still a lot of stigma surrounding men who do that.
Do you want to hear something wild? As I heard, and I'm not sure if I believe this. I'm not sure if I didn't hear this and I didn't make it up. But what if the root of all special snowflakeism is because women went back to work, they left their kids at daycares, and who, you know, there's like one daycare worker who's totally harried and 30 kids that are desperate for attention. They all want their mommies. Who gets their attention? The one that's the most frail.
The one that screams. Yeah.
The one that's, you know, the most demanding. The one who has the most problems. The one who is, you know, the most fragile. The one who has the most problems. So it became a competition of who is the most damaged and who gets the most attention. You add social media to that. You add Tumblr to that. And it's like, I can actually make my whole identity about how fucked up I am. I can just write down that I have OCD and like pretend that I'm bipolar and pretend that I'm a trauma survivor. And it's like cosplaying. It's like role-playing for somebody who's been through shit and, you know, making up backstories. And it's like they're fabricating trauma that people like me actually went through. And it makes me want to put my head through a fucking window.
That's frustrating for me too. But I mean, people have this message that you're not allowed to speak unless it's almost like you have to show a loss of privilege to gain privilege in an online conversation. And I can't blame. And we go back to the misapplied intersectionalism, because I can't blame some cishet white dude from going, wait a minute, like, you're telling me I'm not allowed to speak because I'm privileged, but I don't have the privilege of speaking. It makes no sense.
We've stopped identifying individuals as individuals.
Yeah. And that's exactly what intersectionalism was supposed to not do.
I got into a discussion, you know, we just had, I'm not sure when anyone's going to be listening to this, but the Virginia gun rally, you know, a couple days ago, I got into a discussion about gun control on my Facebook page.
Oh, dear.
And someone said to me, you know what, listen to this person. They are a actually, you can relate. They are, she's a daughter of a Holocaust survivor. That's what it was.
Right.
It's like, and they support keeping people armed so that it never happens again. So you have to listen to them. And I'm not, you know,
oh, it's
I'm
like
not
the looking, one conservative Parkland kid.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and I'm like, you know what? I'm not saying that their opinion doesn't matter,
right?
But it doesn't necessarily override mine. This isn't a matter of, you know, like you said, checking the right boxes. It's like, if you've got five boxes checked and I've only got four, then you automatically overrule me. We've stopped identifying each other as individuals.
I'm going to absolve you right here. I'm the granddaughter of the sole survivor of a Theresienstadt death camp, and I am against gun control.
Well, there you go. So then you override everybody. Gun.
And that's the issue. Somebody, we're this hierarchical dialogue, right? I had an issue this week. This is kind of off topic, but I'll bring it back in for landing, I promise. I know debate as formal debate, you know, like as in debate teams in school. And so there's there's a statement, there's a resolution, be it resolved that.
And you don't attack the person, you attack the subject.
Because you won't persuade. The goal is not to confirm opinion. The way you win a formal debate is everybody votes beforehand what their opinion is on the subject. The team who wins is the team that makes the most people change their minds. Yeah. And that's not how online debates happen. It's not a debate. It's a bludgeoning.
It's a masturbate.
It's a masturbate. It's,
you know, I'm doing a podcast series right now trying to deal with bullying in our schools here in rural Manitoba. And, you know, we were talking about intimate partner violence. We've done a series on that. Rural Manitoba, rural Saskatchewan have the highest instances per capita of intimate partner violence.
Yeah.
30% of victims are male. And, you know, we're trying to address those issues. And I always come back to this is how do we expect our children to respect each other and treat each other with respect on the playground when we as adults cannot do it online?
That I'm concerned about that. That's my concern for the generation that's growing up right now is children learn what they live. Mm-hmm. And what I'm observing right now is we're more insulated from it in Canada, but we are still getting a lot of the insanity from like the UK and the US. And I just can't, when role models are acting like I just want to tell everybody in government right now, totally non-gendered, man the fuck up.
Yep.
But by man the fuck up, I mean, I just say put on the grown-up pants now. Mm-hmm. Because to me, a grown-up, a man, a woman, means you keep your promises. You don't have to fucking counterpunch everything. I hate punching up and I hate counterpunching. You are punching. You are still punching. I don't care if you think you're counterpunching. I don't care if you think you're punching up. You are punching. And the problem is if you're wrong in your opinion of the other person, well, you're not punching up. You're not counterpunching anymore. You're just punching. You're just a fucking bully. Mm-hmm. And bullies are not men. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Bullies are boys.
And you know what? And this is the big thing. Like, you know, coming back to this, what do we expect from our boys? What do we expect from our men? How do we support them? In my home, and this came to, and I love my husband to pieces. When I met my husband, I was a widow with a 2-year-old daughter, a 14-year-old son who actually witnessed, you know, her husband's suicide. I had a lot of shit. And when I met him, I said, you know what? Here I am. This is who I am. I am a strong, opinionated businesswoman. I've got all this fucking baggage. And this is, you know, you probably don't want to have anything to do with me because this is what you're getting into. And I just gave it all to him.
Right.
I even gave him my mental illness diagnosis and said, here you go, read up on it. And, you know, I'll see you around because I guarantee you he's going to run. We're celebrating our 10th anniversary in a couple weeks.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And see, I think he knew what he was getting into. And in our house, when I'm out working right now, you know what he's doing? He's upstairs with the kids. And, you know, if there's laundry to be doing, he's going to do it because it's whoever has the time does it in our house. And our sons see that, which is right. something that my 26-year-old son never saw.
Right.
And I think he's the one that was disadvantaged.
We talked about this on the holiday episode. Yeah. I mean, I think you just landed on something, Michelle, that I think is important. When women are authentic, whole people, it gives the men in our lives license to be authentic, whole people. You can't be constantly mm-hmm. critical of yourself and running yourself down and hiding things and not allowing yourself authentic emotions and then expect the men in your life to feel like it's okay for them to have authentic emotions. Absolutely. You know, when you're killing a bottle of shit Pinot Grigio because you can't talk about what's going on, you're trying to hold it all in because that's a fucked up toxic femininity version of quote unquote support or keeping the family together. You can't expect the man in your life to come and talk to you about how he's feeling because you seem like you're ready to crack.
Well, and you know what? I got to give my husband credit. And I don't know if it is because before we got together, I dumped all this shit and he did his research mm-hmm. or whatever. But one of the things, and it drives me nuts that when women do this, and I do this, and I don't do it as much now, but I used to do it, mm-hmm. is, you know, we look for that reassurance. We play that kind of victim card, yep. looking for that reassurance from our men.
Well, Lex doesn't, but no,
I can kind of see
Lex
that.
Lex just now, goes I and beats someone up.
Sorry.
Okay, well, we got Lex's confirmation. Continue.
Well, you know, and I sit there, and I'll keep this short, but I had this stupid freaking dream a couple weeks ago, and it was one of those stupid insecurity dreams. You know, I dreamt that, you know, my husband wasn't just having an affair, but he came to me and said he was having an affair. And I said, well, that's it. You know, I'm going to be this strong woman and say, well, I guess you're fucked now. Cause now, you know, you got child support, you got to move out, blah, blah, blah. I'm taking you for everything you got. And in my dream, he didn't leave me for this other woman. He moved her into the house because I took all his money. And he couldn't afford to move anywhere.
I've known situations where that's actually happened.
And it was, I woke up in the morning and it was really funny because I woke up and I was mad at him, right? From this dream. I was pissed. I woke up and I'm like, you fucking asshole. I know this is a dream, but I'm still mad.
And I don't have dreams like that. I have dreams where my entire bathroom is full of toothpaste.
Yeah, I'm lucky. I've got three sons. I've actually lived that. That's not a dream.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't want to know about my dreams. I think Leanna might have encountered a few on Facebook, but they're like full movie scripts.
Yeah.
Well, and you know what I love about my husband is I was upset in the morning and I told him about my dream and I said, you know, you just moved this bitch into my house. And he looks at me and he laughs. He goes, I guess that didn't work out too well for you then, huh? Yeah. And he walked into the bathroom and let me just sit there instead of doing that whole, oh, honey, I would never do that to you, blah, blah, blah. It was a fucking dream. He had no reason to try to reassure me or play the hero here. And if he would have, who knows? Maybe I would have kept building on it.
I don't like that reassurance expectation because sometimes I don't think that's the best. Sometimes, yes, it absolutely is the right time. You know, when
it's legitimate, yes. Right. But you know what? Poor men. Like when they get this, they get a lot of shit.
Right.
You know, we started this conversation talking about false accusations. Mm-hmm. One false accusation of rape or incest or inappropriateness. The Me Too movement was powerful, but it also created a lot of people that got hurt for no reason.
Well, it became a Hollywood phenomenon, and this is something to think to talk about another time, because it became a Hollywood phenomenon instead of a regular people phenomenon, mm-hmm. which ties into something Lex said. And I want to mm-hmm. stay on this idea of, you know, the expectations that women have are, we got our own fucked up social messaging. Like, toxic femininity is something we got to talk about, because Michelle, I think you nailed it. The expectation that someone is going to be reassuring no matter how batshit insane we're being is just not realistic.
And yet, you know what?
We think, like, you know, abortion, they're trying to criminalize it. I think that men and women need to fight that together. I think the fact that, you know, 75% of suicides are men. Men get drafted. Men are expected to work to death. Men lose their children when a woman cheats and decides to fuck him over and take half his assets. I think that men and women have to fight for that, you know, human right being violated together. I think men and women have different problems, but I think, again, it comes down to human rights. And I think that humans cry, humans hurt, humans get hungry, humans get cold, humans need reassurance. It's mm-hmm. not even men and women. It's like, you want to be a bro, you want to be a good human. Doesn't matter if you got what you got between your legs. Doesn't matter what you identify as. Be a good human.
Well, and that's a big thing, especially, like I said, as a mom of, you know, boys and a teenage girl. I don't think, or at least I try to not raise them differently. And it's tough. It's like, oh, really? You know, as I got a 14-year-old daughter, I think back to when my son was 14 and this expectation of, you know, his dad, who's now deceased, going, oh, well, that's just what boys are. It's like, you know what? That would never fly for a girl. And in my mind, it doesn't fly for any of my fucking kids. I don't care what's between your legs. We need to stop relying on other people to make us whole. We as women cannot expect men to come in and fill whatever void is in us. We have to find a way to fill it ourselves. And men need to realize that, yes, we cannot make them whole, but we can hold them up as they're holding us up, and we fill each other. Like, this is such this idea that, you know, that whole he completes me thing, fuck that. I am complete with or without him. I just like who I am better with him. And I hope to fuck he feels the same way about me. But I cannot handle, you know, that kind of neediness. And I couldn't imagine a man, like the stress of never being able to just let it go and say, you know what, I'm in pain, or I hurt, and I always wonder when I think back to the death of my husband, if he would have been able to reach out and talk to other people and go, you know what, I'm struggling here. Would he still be here?
See, it's interesting you say that, Michelle, because there's a flip side to that coin as well. Because I'm essentially a professional listener, it's like, I'm sort of the one that listens. I'm always the one that somebody can come and tell their problems to. And I have a really firm boundary where I will be as supportive as shit until you start expecting it. And that's something I'm noticing. Balance is difficult. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, as much as I think you nailed it, the idea that there's supporting someone and then there's enabling someone.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And supporting is going back to what your husband did, not petting your head when you just shit on the carpet.
You know? Absolutely.
And too many people want their head petted. They want a cookie after they've just shit on the carpet.
Yeah. And you know what? We need to stop that. And it doesn't matter gender, sex, none of that matters. We need to start holding ourselves to a higher standard. Like, I think we've done ourselves such a disservice by feeling like we need to rely on, you know, these stereotypes, that we need to rely on what society expects instead of just saying, I'm a person.
Yeah.
You know, I remember, Lex, the first time I heard you, you and Leanna, you're talking about the Bitch podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved that podcast so much because that's me, right? I've been a single mom. I am a business owner. I'm, you know, that kind of boss bitch type personality, which all those personality traits in a man are, you know,
assumed.
Positive.
Yeah.
And to me, you know, people, even tonight, we were out for a drink and someone said to my husband, oh, doesn't she just freak you out when she acts like that? And he's like, that's who she is. Like, he fell in love with me. And, you know, Leanna, what you said is you're a listener. I'm a fixer.
Right. Which is generally something you see more in men.
Yeah. You want to tell me a problem? I'm like, okay, let's fix it. And
I will do that. I've learned to back off on that and ask people if they want advice, because that can really piss some people off.
Yeah, I haven't learned that yet, and I just don't piss people off.
Work in TV.
Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, you learn quick not to tell people their jobs when you end up in really regimented environments where everybody has their role and things have to function. But that's the thing, right? Like, that's the traditional, the stereotype of a woman saying, I just want you to listen to my problem. I don't want you to fix my problem. I was the one getting told that.
Yeah. And I can't handle that. It's like, if you don't want your, I have this saying, it's that, you know what, if it's a problem, there's a solution.
Yes.
And if you don't want the solution or won't take the solution, you don't have a problem. You have a fact of life. So you might as well just accept it and shut up about it. If you're going to complain about it like it's a problem, let's solve it.
And I think that's healthy.
A huge can of worms for me that I'm not going to go into, because you're not my marriage therapist.
Okay, that'll be a subject for another. What particular point, Lex?
My dearly beloved will mm-hmm. just give me a running dialogue of like all the shit that's going wrong in a day, and I'm like, I can't fix this from here. So, you know, like, I understand you're venting, but it pisses me off because it's like constant. But then if I'm like, you know, talking to myself, you know, I've got to find socks, and like looking for socks or whatever, mm-hmm. he'll be like, I guess I've got to find you socks. It's like, no, I'm looking for socks, and I'm talking about the fact that I'm looking for socks.
I see that dynamic a lot. And I think this is kind of a male female thing, which is why I thought maybe you were going with this. The idea that I don't think some men are aware of how much they verbalize their issues
mm-hmm.
and how much harder it lands in their ears when a woman does the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's just socialization, you know, agreed. Like just because, you know, if one of their buddies was saying, I got to do this, and I got to do this, I got to do this, the assumption wouldn't be, or maybe it is, I don't know, that their buddy wants them to do it. That seems to be a particular zone men step into when it comes to women.
And I think we as women do that to men.
Oh, I think there's definitely a flip side of that. What I think I see a lot of women do, I saw this in my family and I swore I wouldn't do it, is instead of flat out asking, can you please put that dish in the sink? They hint.
Oh yeah. The passive aggressive.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
They hint. And I can't stand that. Cause I mean, like,
I get accused of that. I talk constantly. My life is a sausage party. I don't have any family.
Right.
I've got like, you know, my punk family, and it's all dudes. I've got like my best female friend and a few women, but mostly it's like, put that fucking dish in the sink.
And you know what? I think a lot of people would prefer that.
Yeah.
Just suddenly like slamming the dishwasher or something like that. You know, like that's not a mature response. Yeah. What dishwasher? Or, you know, angrily doing dishes, like not.
Is there another way to do them?
Well, that's a separate thing with you, Lex. But yeah. You know what? Unusually angry. If someone's angry all the time, it's different. But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, well, that passive aggressiveness, it's, I find, you know, and I don't want to necessarily stereotype, but we do that as women. It's like,
yeah,
we sit there and we're going to hint around about it and say, you know, when you talk about the dishwasher, it's like, oh, I see there's dishes on the counter.
Yes.
Too bad the dishwasher's empty, instead of just saying, hey, why don't you put that in the dishwasher? And we hint about it, hoping that people connect the dots. And if they don't, we take that as some kind of slight. It's like, well, they must not love us if they're not listening to us and connecting the dots, right?
And that's old school coding, right? Because women used to have to talk that, and even still, the fear of getting branded bossy is so strong that instead of being assertive, you do that annoying shit. And no matter how much it drives you crazy, so many people do it even though it makes them nuts.
Think about this, though, for 1 second.
I'll do that, too. I'll say, like, I got to go downstairs and get this, and I'm just saying it to myself because I talk to myself pretty well constantly because I'm nuts.
Right.
And then Mike will be like, ugh, I'll go get it. And then he accuses me of being like, you asked me to get shit too often. I'm like, I didn't say, can you go get this for me? I just said, I got to go get this thing.
That's family of origin programming, though.
Oh, absolutely.
Family of origin programming.
His family kind of sucks. So, but I see that.
I notice, I think because we see men as head of households still, despite all our, you know, all our progressiveness, that I think it's undervalued how much family dynamics impact the assumptions they have about where you're coming from.
Well, can you imagine, like, just for a second, imagine what it was like living as a man who constantly almost has to be on edge trying to decode.
Yeah.
You know, and I get this in online discussions all the time. It's like, well, you said this or you meant this. I'm like, no, I didn't. I said this because I meant exactly what I said.
Yeah.
Stop trying to interpret what I say. But that's how they're coded. They're like, well, you said A, so you must be in B. It's like, no, I fucking meant A.
Their moms did it to them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And one thing I find, and one thing I'm grateful for, you know, don't get me wrong, I'm not grateful that my husband's dead, but the fact that what I see in my husband today and my relationship today is we came into this older.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were both in our mid-30s when we came into our relationship. And I was like, okay, this is who I am. And we kind of left that shit at the door. And our relationship, this, our communication today compared to my first marriage that happened when I was, you know, 19 years old, night and fucking day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. See, I have the opposite challenge of, I got married when I was only 21.
Mm-hmm.
And so I am, I would say literally, and not in the millennial, literally means figurative kind of way, I am literally a different person than I was when my husband married me. And he still has sometimes this impression of me from when I was 20 years old. And I understand that, but it drives me crazy at the same time.
I can imagine.
Well, I notice though with male relationships, with male friendships, and this is just an observation. I am not saying it is so, like what the origin is of this, but guys, if they've known each other from high school, they will tell the same fucking stories they tell each other every time they get together from high school.
Mm-hmm.
There is an arresting there that is comforting. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying it's different. I think the last thing any woman ever wants to talk about is high school.
I didn't go to high school.
You know, it's fucking horrible. I don't know if anybody in high school was fun for with women.
I kicked out selling drugs.
Yeah. Oh, there you go.
I was, you know what? I was, I'm a recovering drug addict. Yeah. I've been clean 19 years now.
Me too. Mazel tov.
Yeah. I heard that from your last podcast. Like we have so much in common. It's Look really kind of creepy, but
that's
it's
amazing.
It's
amazing.
It's actually, one of those. That's why I didn't have you two ladies on together. I thought you were too much alike. But with this one, you were both perfect. So yeah.
But you know what? It's when I get together, you know, I've got a dysfunctional family of origin and get together with like my mom and my sister. It's like, I am not who I was 20 years ago. Like, can we stop talking about what it was like when we were kids or what it was like 25 years? I'm not that person.
Yeah.
And they can't see me for who I am today. So I can't imagine being like good for you guys, like a marriage. I keep teasing my husband that we're celebrating our 10th anniversary. I got married every decade of my life, right? I got married at 20 and I got married at 30.
You avoided a lot of complications.
Me too.
So it's like, so you know what? He either has to divorce me or remarry me because I'm due for a new wedding anytime now.
Well, you can renew your vows though. Like,
oh, we're talking about it, but I haven't decided yet, you know.
But that's why they always say, you know, it's a cliche of don't bring up the past. Mm-hmm. But it's true because if you've spent a significant portion of your life or your entire adult life with someone, bringing up the past isn't fair because, you know, it may be something you'd never have done in a million years now, but that was who you were at the time. And that doesn't make it right or wrong. You just, I say this all the time, but like, you can't expect a 20-year-old to be anything but a 20-year-old.
Yep.
And you cannot expect a 40-year-old to have the same perspective on the world as a 20-year-old.
These
are just facts. And yet too often, 20-year-olds are expected to take on the responsibilities of 40-year-olds, and 40-year-olds think they have to act like 20-year-olds to be appealing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fucking stupid.
Well, and I find this when we talk about, you know, the generation wars. And it's like, well, when we were 20, we were so much. It's like, no, when we were 20, we were just as fucking stupid.
When you were 20, you could buy a house stupid in different ways.
Well, there you go. When we were, you know, when we were 20, the world was different. But I mean,
that's right.
But this hits men especially hard, right? Because I mean, look at the shit they're getting bombarded with.
I can't even imagine. Like, I have never been so grateful to be a woman as I am today. And I look at my sons and I'm thinking, you know, my 26-year-old is, you know, as far as I know, he's single. I got little ones coming up and I'm like, I can teach my daughter everything I know as a woman. Mm-hmm. My husband can teach our sons everything he knows as a man, but what they're going to come up against is different than what he ever had to.
Well, it's funny. Last night, you know the show Stumptown?
Yep.
No. I don't know if you've seen it. Colby Smulders, the chick from the Marvel movies, and she plays this like Rockford Files style detective. It's basically all the detective cliches. She's a hard drinker. She's a womanizer. They have her as a combat veteran with PTSD. It's sort of handled okay sometimes. But there was this thing where she was hired by this woman who owned a male strip club. It was a vegan strip bar. So the only meat was the men.
The men. Yeah,
and so that. Of course there are these scenes where it's exactly what it would be if it were a 70s show, where there's that one scene where this parade of bikini girls come in and it's like eye candy. And instead it was all these, you know, those ridiculously hard bodied guys where their stomachs look like plasticine.
Yeah.
And it freaks me out. But I was really uncomfortable.
I have one of those carrying my groceries.
I was really, really uncomfortable by this whole thing. And it made me wonder, is this actually what men were feeling when the bikini girls show up and they just didn't feel licensed to say it?
I can see that.
Because it wasn't, you know, the blonde skinny chicks wasn't what they were attracted to. It seemed inhuman to them, and you know, this thing of what's wrong with me that I don't like this. I have those moments all the time where, like, you know, shirtless Thor and everyone. I personally think that, like, Endgame Thor, where he gets like the dad bod Thor, I like that Thor better than the Thor from the first movie. Thor in the first movie was an asshole.
Yep.
I like this new guy who's been through some shit.
And you know what? You can actually relate to him. And it makes me wonder, and I'm going to actually, after we're done this tonight, I'm going to talk to my husband about this, because I am not the traditionally, you know, hard body freaking chick that every guy is supposed to be attracted to. And it's like, how weird is that for them? It's like, here is this gorgeous model and everybody wants her. And what if you're a guy and you're looking at her and go, I'm straight, but I still don't want her. What is wrong with me?
I was super uncomfortable.
I'm not a thing, you know, I'm not like that. I have this problem with the idea, and I know, and I kind of apologize, you know, if you're one of the women that are out there and you want to share the pictures of, I'm not like that. I'm like an intelligence junkie. I want
what
a man.
What do they call that? Sapiosexual?
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah.
Oh no, that term
man
is ableist
that I can like freaking debate with.
Yeah, what's that?
That term is ableist now. I identified as sapio for like
really
decades, and I was recently told that I'm an ableist because that excludes people who have lower intelligence, and I require a certain type of intelligence. I need speed. Like my brain works very quickly. I need someone who's fast. That's what does it for me. Somebody can like go back and forth with me. I love that.
But you know what? There's always some kind of discrimination when it comes to our own sexuality and our own attractiveness. Mm-hmm. If I'm straight, I'm actually excluding all women and all mm-hmm. trans women and everything else because I like penis. You know what?
Yeah.
We can't stop being who we are based on what society tells us we have to identify as.
Yeah.
I once got told that I was a piece of shit because somebody told me they were HIV positive when we were dating. And I said, I'm not really comfortable with that. You know, I'm sorry. That makes me very apprehensive.
This is the age before non-detectable was a thing, right?
Yeah, this was a long time ago. And then more recently, I got told that I was a piece of shit because I refused to have sex with a person who was HIV positive because that was like, I forget the word, something phobic.
Almost a reverse lack of consent, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like you are forced to screw anything or else you're a bad person. And that
Did
just
you hear
sits
reverse
me wrong.
Rape?
What?
There's reverse rape now too. So if you rape someone, you're a rapist. But if a 500-pound woman decides to come up to your husband and says, fuck me, and he says, no, thank you, you rejected her, so you're harming her, so you reverse raped her.
What?
Okay, mm-hmm. I've never heard that.
That's a good one.
Okay, I mean, eventually this shit will settle down.
Yeah, we said that 2 years ago.
See, that's what I think. I'll bring it in for a landing here. Obviously, we're going to have to revisit this topic. Maybe like once every so often, we'll do the man show. Because it seems like there's a lot here. But it just, I personally think, being a student of history and being a gender studies washout, I couldn't take it. But I did learn a lot about historical trends. And odd numbered decades tend to be fucked. Mm-hmm. And even numbered decades are kind of less fucked. There are exceptions, but I mean, I guess the 70s was more fucked than the 60s, but things come in waves. And right now we're in sort of the same militants that we had in the 70s, but then the same sort of challenging paradigms that we were in the 90s all at once. And so it's nuts right now. But if people can just hang on for a bit, things will settle down and we'll start, you know, coming down to a place that's more navigatable. I won't say
if anyone wants me, I'll be back in 1995, and that's my final say on it. I'm in 95.
In 1995, I was hearing about how marriage was heteronormative, and so gay marriages were actually homophobic.
I wasn't hearing that yet. All I know is this woman named Noni came and started picking a fight with me because I had sheep bones on my jacket, and I told her that her beer had like been processed through carbon, which is animal bones.
Yeah.
And then I dragged her outside, and I sat on her and punched her in the face a bunch of times.
Yeah. Well, that sounds more rational than what I was dealing with. I mean, because this is why with all this culture war stuff, I'm like, oh, this again? I'm like the old lady on the porch, you know? Like, because in the 90s, I was very pro-gay marriage. Way before it was cool. But I was told that was heteronormative. That I was actually trying to force straight culture onto gay people because marriage was an inherently unnatural state that was patriarchal and all this other stuff. And so we shouldn't be pushing for gay people to get married.
How about gay people have the same civil rights as every other person living in their country?
And that was my argument. But there we go, right? There was a very, very vocal non-heteronormative faction back then that did not win. The
you know
marriage
what you
equality.
At that point?
What's that?
You take your finger. You know what you just do at that point is you take your finger and you start pointing at their nose, and they're like talking, and you keep just bringing it closer to their nose. And the more they talk, the closer you bring it, and then they touch their nose. Put your finger on their nose, and they keep talking. They're like, "What are you doing?"
I kind of do a version of that online. Whereas when someone just goes totally off the rails, I just start posting random GIFs.
Yeah.
And wait for them to notice that the conversation is no longer making sense.
I just respond and I go, okay.
Either that or I do the Southern comes out in me and I just say, you have a blessed day. And I stop your heart.
The internet to me is every day you open your computer and sometimes you just see a huge pile of shit. Like you're walking down the street and you see a giant pile of shit. You can just walk around that pile of shit. You don't have to jump in it. You don't have to rub it all over yourself. You don't have to roll in it. You can just walk around that pile of shit. And if somebody's in there covered in shit and be like, you know, get in here and get covered in shit with me, you can be like, nah, you can just walk away.
And I think that's really good advice for life and a good place to land.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Don't roll on the shit.
Because don't touch the poop is the internet mantra. But that's, I guess, the best advice we can give for guys who are struggling right now or women trying to figure out male behaviors they don't understand or people who might be struggling with their own gender identity. If somebody seems to be rolling around in shit, don't join them.
I think it all comes down to, you know what? We got to go back and go old school. It's like golden rule. Treat everybody the way you want to be treated. Forget the fucking labels. Man, woman, however they identify, don't care. People are human regardless of what's between their legs, what color they are, what religion, what race. We are just human beings and we all have the same feelings. We all have the same expectations and we all want the same things. We all want to belong. We all want to be loved. We all want to be treated with respect. So if we drop the labels and stop worrying about what the internet tells us we should be thinking and feeling, we'll be good.
Yeah. I think that's very important that don't let the internet tell you who you should be.
Yeah, you don't have to also count the turds or measure the amount of shit you're standing in, because if you're all standing in shit, you shouldn't be comparing your piles of shit. You just be like, why are we all standing in shit?
Yep. And anybody,
I don't want to stand in shit anymore.
Anybody who has an issue with the amount of times Lex just talked about shit, do not listen to the slut episode. It's far, far worse than that.
Oh, hey, no, that was a great episode, by the way.
I had so many people going, I Googled Genki Genki. Why? I'm like, I told you not to. Yeah. So yes, it does get rawer than this episode if this is your first experience with Hey Lady.
Now is your opportunity to look up the German classic Caviar Party.
No. All right, time to go out. Ladies, thank you. Well, everybody is going to the Google. I am Leanna Kersner. This has been Hey Ladies on the FU Network. If you want to support us, go on funetwork.tv, buy a t-shirt, buy some socks, or you can become a patron. FU Network TV on Patreon. We're on PayPal somewhere, but the best thing to do is just go to funetwork.tv. Check out all the other shows, guys. Check out Mensplaining, which is our more testosterone-related counterpart where they do kind of the exact opposite thing. I don't think they'd ever talk about women because they probably know they'd get in trouble. We're going to have to start doing mashups with them. I keep feeling this, especially on this topic.
Let's do it. Ladies,
thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is fun! The FU Network.